Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault. The following presentation takes place at the 2011 Forum for Primary Prevention Advocates called Ending Violence Against Women and Teen Dating Violence. Keynote speaker Paul Kibble, activist and co-author of Helping Teens Stop Violence, Build Community, and Stand for Justice, talks about how adults can stand as allies with young people.
So I want to say a few things and get us to think a little bit about what it means to be allied with young people. What does that mean in terms of showing up? What does it mean to show up tomorrow? What does it mean to show up in general? And how we think of that in terms of the social justice work that we're doing or trying to do and supporting the social justice work that many of them are doing. We're in the room today together out of a history of the women's liberation movement, the battered women's movement, the rape prevention movement, child sexual assault movement. I would like you to think for a moment, what's one impact that the women's liberation movement has had on your life? Now, I know there may be many of those impacts, right? But just think for a moment, what is one legacy of that movement that lives today in your life? And we could spend a long time thinking about the impacts on our society and our personal lives of the women's movement, but we wouldn't be in the room today. We wouldn't be doing this work. We wouldn't have any kind of movement. And many of us would be very different people without the women's liberation movement, without the courage and passion and commitment and creativity that came out of that movement in so many aspects of our society, fundamentally revolutionized our society. I've been impacted by that in many ways. So I want to say it's a real privilege to be here at the conference interacting with all of you. But I also have to acknowledge that it's partly because of my privilege that I'm here, because there are so many of you who could be up here talking about being allies to women and talking about doing this work. And I've had the privileges of being male, being white, being educated, being able to write books, being able to do this work for a long time. And that's the confluence of a lot of different kinds of privilege. And so I want to acknowledge that privilege and to pay homage to the women who have been on the front lines of this struggle for so many decades. I think it's a very exciting time to be in the world, and it's not necessarily a really exciting time to be in this movement, but there's a lot of people organizing everywhere you look, whether it's North Africa, the Middle East, South America, Asia, communities around this country, workers, young people, and there's a spirit of resistance, of organizing, that is prevalent. And everywhere I go, there's movements, there's people organizing. And almost all of that is being led by, or majority participation, or dramatic participation by young people. By young people, I mean teens as well as young adults. Whether it's movements for liberation in the Middle East, or environmental justice movements here or around the world, struggles over educational equity, all kinds of movements that young people are out in the streets involved with, leading, creating. So we have to ask ourselves this work of being allied with young people. Are we allied with those young people? Are we supporting those kinds of projects? Or have we gotten constrained in our thinking to think about just the particular youth that are in our programs or that we have contact with? Are we really actually being inspired by and supporting the efforts of young people who are already on the front lines? Often when I think about this work, I think of, well, we've got to organize young people. We've got to get them going. But young people are going already in so many ways. And our role as allies is, how do we support that? How do we enhance that? How do we publicize it? How do we take what they're learning and spread that further? And spread it to the youth that we know and interact with who may not be in contact with that, who may not know that down the road or in the next town or another state that young people are on the move in so many ways. I just want to say a few words about being allies, and I want to do a little work with you thinking about what it means. When I think about being an ally, I think about it as a practice. It's something we do. Many times I'm tempted to say I'm an ally, but it's not an identity. It's the way I show up every day. It's what I do in the morning. It's what I do when I'm out in the streets, in my own home, when I go into schools. It's that daily practice. And that means that we get a chance to practice every day. you do something every day, you get better at it, right? So we need to think about being adult allies as an everyday practice that we are learning as we go. And because one of the things about practicing something is you're not perfect, right? If you're in a process of learning, so you make mistakes. And it's fine for us to make mistakes. Young people want us to show up. They don't want us to be perfect. They want us to show up. And we can sum up being an adult ally to young people in two ways. One is we have a role of challenging adult power, adult institutions, and adult practices wherever we are, and in our own organizations, in our communities, and in wherever, in our classrooms. And the flip side of that is supporting youth, young people, healing their understanding and their leadership. So there's two sides of that, working with young people and working with the adults around us. And the hardest work is often working with the adults around us. And that's mostly what young people want us to do. They don't actually need as much support as we think. They need a lot of interference from all the adults that are already interfering in the ways that they are coming together and figuring out how to do things. I want to read a series of statements. I'm going to do a little exercise with you that some of you are familiar with, maybe. But I want to do it with a different emphasis because I'm going to read some statements, and I want you to think about each statement, stand if it applied to you when you were a young person. But I want you to think about what did you need from an adult ally when you were in that situation. So often when we do this exercise, it's about what did we experience and feel and what happened to us. I want to do that today to think about what does it mean for adults to show up to support us when we're in that kind of situation. So I'm going to read a few statements and think back to when you were 16 and younger and decide for yourself whether it applies to you. And we'll do it in silence so we can pay attention to the feelings. And after each statement, I'm going to ask you to reflect on what would it have meant for an adult ally to be there for you in that situation? What did you need from an adult ally? So first of all, please stand silently if your dress or appearance was ever criticized or ridiculed by an adult when you were a young person. Okay. What would it have meant for you to have an adult ally in that situation? What might they have done? Just very briefly reflect on that. Okay. Thank you. Please stand if you ever felt that your racial or ethnic group, your gender, your religious or cultural heritage, or some other group that you are a part of was not represented, was represented inaccurately, or was put down in the curriculum that you were taught. What are some ways that an adult ally could have been there for you in that situation? What did you need from an adult ally? Okay, thank you. Please stand if you ever received the message from a teacher, a student, or an administrator that people like you were not normal, were lazy, were not intelligent, or were otherwise different or inferior and not deserving of full respect. Okay. Again, what did you need from an adult ally in that situation? How could an adult have shown up and been there for you? What would it have felt like, looked like? Thank you. Please stand if you ever received a message that there was something different or wrong about your family, that it wasn't normal, or that your family was inferior because of class, race, gender, sexual orientation, religion, or another kind of difference. What did you need from an adult ally in that situation? Thank you. Please stand if your physical or if you ever felt that your physical safety was threatened or violated while at school. How could an adult have been an ally to you in that situation? What did you need? What did it look like? Thank you. Please stand if you were ever the object of a degrading comment or put down or made to feel ashamed or humiliated by a teacher or by another young person. What would an adult ally have done to support you in that situation? Thank you. Please stand if you yourself ever made a degrading comment or put down a fellow student or another young person. Notice any feelings? Look around. What would it have meant to have an adult ally at that point? Thank you. Just a couple more. Please stand if you were ever ignored, served last, or watched suspiciously in a store because you were a young person. What would have been useful action from an adult ally in that kind of situation? Thank you. And finally, please stand if you ever drank, took other drugs, underate, overate, or did something dangerous or unsafe in order to cover your feelings or hide your pain as a young person. And again, what did you need from an adult ally in that moment and that period? What could they have provided? What would it have looked like or felt like for them to be there? Thank you. So before I continue on, I'd like to just encourage you to pair up with somebody close by for a moment and just talk about what came up for you in thinking about what is the role of an adult ally when we're actually under attack, when we're actually being marginalized or discriminated against or abused in some way. So just turn to somebody close by and talk about whatever thoughts came up for you thinking about that. It's very powerful to do this exercise with young people and adults, because for the young people to look around and see that adults have experienced these things, and for the adults to be reminded that young people are still going through it, really builds cross-generational solidarity. You know, we all have a lot of experience, both in terms of being allies and needing allies and being in situations where we didn't have allies when we needed them. So really, this is a time to, in this session, is to remind ourselves of some of the wisdom that we have, and how do we bring that to tomorrow and further into the future, because it's not like this is new stuff, but it's really easy as professionals, as nonprofit workers, as all the roles that we carry, just as adults, to claim, to pretend, to act as if we've put all this behind us, we don't really have problems anymore, we've just got it together, and we just show up for young people in some kind of magical way. I had the pleasure of working with young people this morning, and I asked them at one point, you know, what do you need from adults to show up for you as allies? And I said, you know, we don't come well trained, right? We need to be educated by you in terms of what you need from us. And they were very clear about some of the things that they said. And we need to remind ourselves that we are in training and that we are in training by the young people around us. And we need to constantly ask them, what do you need from me? How can I support you? And I don't think often enough, I know I don't often enough ask what's needed. I assume that I can figure that out. I assume that I have enough experience to do that. But there's situations are new, people are new, conditions are different, and I have to keep checking in and asking, you know, what's going on and how can I help? How can I be at your side to help you figure this out? So that's part of the practice of being an ally, is keeping checking in with the folks that we're trying to be allied with. For me, the fundamental part of the work that we're doing is to provide young people with what they need to step up in leadership in collective movements for social justice. That I see that as our fundamental task, to figure out with them what they need to be able to step forward in leadership to change, build, transform our communities. Now, that is not in our job descriptions. We will never have a job description that says, go out there and organize with young people and transform and build a different kind of community and create justice in our society. Right? Our mandate is generally to save and rescue young people, to help them get ahead individually, to fulfill our multitude of requirements for to get more funding, which means that we're supposed to be successful with some young people that we can hold up and say, look what we did. But that allows us to turn around and to the rest of the young people who we didn't have the resources to serve and say, too bad, or you must not have been smart enough or didn't work hard enough, or these three made it and the other 50 of you didn't make it. That makes the foundations feel good, the government feels good, we get more funding, and we can go rescue another three young people, right? That's our mandate, and we will never have adequate funding and resources and time and energy and what it takes to build movement, build social justice action with young people as part of our job description, because it's not in the interest of the people who fund us to actually transform our communities, to empower our communities. That means that the only way to be allies to young people and any people in our communities on the front lines of these struggles is to be subversive, right? Now, that's a complex word, right? How do we do this work subversively? It's not going to be in our job description to work for social justice, but that's what we know is what's required. So we have to think about, given that we have access to resources, we have organizations, we have meeting places, we have transportation, we have information, we have relationships, we have a lot of resources, how do we transfer that and make it available to young people and to other folks in our communities in ways that is outside of the bounds of our control, our funding mandates, our need to come up with successful cases and successful projects? Now, of course, if you're subversive and you're just off there by yourself being subversive and challenging things, you quickly become marginalized. You quickly become isolated, and often you quickly become unemployed, right? So the other piece of that subversive is we have to be strategically subversive. That means we have to build networks of allies. We need to have long-term thinking about how do we transform our organizations and our communities? How do we free up and liberate the resources we have access to so that young people and others in the community can actually use them on their own behalf, in their own interests? So I think more and more that we need to be guided by this phrase of doing the work strategically, subversively. And that will look different in many different places. But when you're subversive, you're taking risks. It means you're challenging power. You're challenging adult power. You're challenging funders. You're challenging wherever it is that is limiting our ability to do this work. I don't want to underestimate the difficulties, the challenges of being an ally. I think there's two main kinds of challenges in stepping up as allies. The first is, I grew up and was socialized to believe that young people weren't too smart. We didn't have enough experience. We were way too emotional. And adults knew what needed to be done anyway, so, and they had done everything of significance in the world, and they should be in charge, right? So very much what I learned about women and people of color and other groups. And I internalized that stuff, you know. So when I show up to be an ally with young people, and I'm carrying all of this training and messaging, part of the work for me is to transform myself and unlearn all of that adultism that I've internalized just with living day by day in the society and being treated that way and reinforced and trained. So that makes it hard. And I step into the room and young people look at me and I'm another adult, right? They've had lots of experience with adults. Some of it's been good, some of it's been bad, some of it's probably been really horrible and abusive. And I walk in the room and they don't know who I am. I can't expect them to trust me. It would be foolhardy for me to expect them to trust me. I represent all of the systems and all of the adults who have punished them, who have graded them, who have evaluated them, who have medicated them, who have incarcerated them, who have disciplined them. So I can't expect to just walk in the room and be accepted or liked or trusted. And they can't afford to do that. That trust, that acceptance grows over time as we show up. And then we show up again, and we show up again. And then when things get hard, we still show up. And over time, we build those relationships. But those are barriers to being, allies, because we represent so much adult power and control in young people's lives. So I don't want to say too much more, but a couple of things that I think are important. One is that some of the ways that we need to show up as adult allies is in our organizations and in all of the places where we sit, where decisions are getting made about young people, and there's no young people. And all the decisions about funding youth programming, and there's no young people. And even further, where there's decisions being made about housing and healthcare and other major impacts on young people, and there's no young people. And I would be remiss as a white person if I was sitting in rooms making policy decisions like that and there were no people of color and I didn't say something. That would be a complete irresponsible way to be in that room. And it goes for all of us as adults when we're in spaces where there are no young people, but decisions are getting made that affect their lives and affect the lives in the community. And so we need to get really good at figuring out what to say and how to say it and how to bring that up, because over and over again, that's going to be true, right? Now, but I also wouldn't be a very effective ally if I did that and I looked around the room and hoped that maybe somebody else would second me, would say, yes, I agree, because that's not very likely. More likely, a couple of adults will come up after the meeting and say, well, I'm really glad you said that, right? No, that we do. So if I'm going to be effective as an ally in those situations, I have to build some allies ahead of time so that I know when I look around the room that I'm going to find people who know that they have a role to step up to and say, yeah, I agree with that. That's really important. Because we can say it once, but when somebody else says it again, and somebody else says it again, it begins to have some resonance. It begins to change the mindset of the committee, the organization, wherever we are. So there's strategic ways to do that. But again, the bottom line is I need to be in those spaces where there's no youth present to represent themselves. I need to be raising the inclusion of their voices. And another way we need to be adult allies is in our own marginalization in our organizations. We are often marginalized because we're doing prevention work. We're often marginalized because we're working with young people. And we hope or try that we can do this work on the side, basically, trying to buffer the young people from the interference of the rest of the organization and their expectations and guidelines and protocols and everything. And I think over and over again, I found that it's very difficult to sustain this work. You can do good work for a little while, but you get marginalized and isolated, and the program gets marginalized and isolated, and it never actually transformed the organization in support of a youth-allied organization. So we need to be thinking strategically about how to transform our own organization so that this work lies in the center of it, not on the margins. And that's part of being an adult ally. And that means bringing young people into our organizations in multiple levels of leadership. I want to say that being an adult ally is, like I said, a practice. It's not a professional role. And it's something that it carries over beyond our professional work. That means in our families, we need to be thinking from the earliest ages of our children's lives, how they participate in decision-making in our families. How we give them the information, the experience to participate and allow them, welcome them into increasing levels of democratic participation in our families. Those of us who are teachers or running youth programs need to be thinking all the time about how to open up the process so that young people are actually stepping up into leadership and decision making. in our neighborhood meetings and communities, in our religious organizations. We need to be allies all the time, not just when we're professionally working with young people. One of the things that gets in the way of being allies, I think, for many of us, certainly for me, is that as we've done this work and as we get older, we get discouraged sometimes. Sometimes we get cynical. Sometimes we get burned out. And young people bring a tremendous amount of enthusiasm and passion and excitement. And we often talk about how inspiring they are, but we're also a little skeptical that they'll be able to follow through on it or to achieve what they think. One of the ways that I hope that we will be able to show up is by putting that skepticism or cynicism or disillusionment, burned outness aside, and really welcome what they bring and embrace it and embrace the possibility that they can really do it. Because when we look around the world, young people are really doing it despite our skepticism and cynicism. One of the things that the young people said was they really wanted adults to listen to them and understand them. Understanding is a whole different level than just listening, right? It means really trying to get inside of what they're experiencing so that we can actually resonate with that. We can be present for that. That's, for me, one of my goals, to really be present and try to understand what they're saying underneath what they're saying. The other part of being an ally, of course, is to validate and affirm and celebrate their resiliency, their power, their insight, their creativity, all of the wonderful things that they bring. I just want to remind us that young people are on the front lines of oppression and violence, but they're also on the front lines of resistance and transformation. And if we stand with them, with our own power and insight and creativity and humor and love, then we are unstoppable in building the communities we all long for. The beloved community that we've talked so much about, the community in which we can live and work together to sustain community, nurture each individual, create a multicultural, multi-cross-generational society based on love, caring, justice, and interdependence with all living things. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit CalCASA.org. That's CalCASA.org.